Chapter 22, War Song. Igori stood in the bay, watching as the other pack leaders straggled in. There were nearly 60 packs aboard the Vesalius, more even, perhaps, than the benefactor realized. The packs grew and split like cells, spreading through the hollow places, making the ship their own. Most of the packs were small, only a dozen or so individuals. Others were significantly larger. Her own pack numbered nearly 100, a third of whom were only half-grown. One of many reasons why her voice carried the loudest. She studied the others as they drifted towards her. She could almost smell the suspicion bleeding off them. It was rare that they met like this, unless commanded by the benefactor. It was rarer still that she was the one to call for such a thing. They feared a cull, and not without reason. She had been forced more than once to butcher her own kin when they forgot their place in the benefactor's designs. Her generation, and those who'd come before, had been built for loyalty. Their devotion to the benefactor was as much chemical as anything. She knew this, and felt no distaste for it. The benefactor was wise, and knew what sort of savagery lurked in their hearts. But the generations who'd come after her own were not all hard-wired for constancy. Instead, the benefactor indulged their competitive natures, allowing them to strive as they would among themselves. And some took that as permission to set their sights higher than they ought. The thought brought with it memories of Paramar and the treacherous system lords. 7 generations of nobility, their genetics no less a product of the benefactor's skill than her own, but with none of her loyalty or common sense. They had sought to match their will against that of the benefactor, and come out the poorer for it, thanks in no small part to the effects of herself and her pack. She smiled slightly, recalling the look of bewilderment on the face of one of the system lords as she pulled the strands of monofilament wire tight about his thickly muscled neck. He had clawed at her hands, slamming her into marble columns and balcony railings as she clung to his back, sawing through his reinforced spinal column. He had thought himself her superior, that she was nothing more than another mutant. He had not realized, until the very end, that she was his successor. Igori flicked the memory aside as the last of her kin straggled into the bay. All of them were armed, some more obviously than others. She rested her hand on the shuriken pistol thrust through her belt. Between that and her knife, she had few worries.
"Why did you call us here?"
one of the pack leaders barked. Gruul, heavy with muscle, and his face covered in spiral tattoos. One of his eyes was missing, lost in a hunt. He wore an Eldar spirit stone in its place, the gem flickering oddly.
"The prey is attempting to take the ship," Igori said flatly. "Again,"
a pack leader named Vorsha said. She scratched her cheek.
"They do not learn."
Gruul laughed at this, and others joined him.
"They seek to turn the benefactor's servants against him in his absence." "They are meat," Gruul said dismissively. "They are strong meat," Igori said. "Only if you are weak. Are you weak, grandmother?"
Gruul flexed his fingers in what might have been anticipation. Gruul wanted to be first of firsts, which was only proper. The benefactor believed that ambition was to be cherished. Igori smiled and spread her hands.
"I am old, Gruul. That brings a certain infirmity."
Her lips peeled back from her teeth. They were still strong, still sharp. Gruul hesitated. His good eye shrank to a slit. He lowered his hands. Igori nodded in satisfaction.
"They are strong meat," she continued, "and they do not fear us. If they come against us, we will be hard-pressed." "We should hunt them,"
Vorsha trilled. Igori glanced at her. Vorsha was young, younger even than Gruul. Almost as young as Igori had been when she became first of her pack. Vorsha balanced a needle-bladed knife on one calloused finger as she spoke.
"We can hunt them and collect their glands for the benefactor."
"And how will we hunt them when they know we are coming, when they watch the corridors and bulkheads?"
Igori gestured sharply. They know us, our prey, and they will trap us and kill us unless we take the fight to them.
Confused looks followed this. Igori shook her head in disappointment.
We cannot hunt them. We must fight them as they fight, not as a pack, picking off the stragglers, but as an army, killing an enemy.
It was an alien concept, though they had all fought in their share of battles. To fight in lines and rows with strategy rather than instinct, that was the way of prey. She could smell their disapproval. Gruul eyed her as if weighing up his chances. She looked up and nodded, giving the signal. Fulgrim dropped down from the observation platform a moment later. He landed lightly, despite his bulk. Gruul and the others drew back, most of them going for their weapons. Igori snarled wordlessly, stopping them from doing something stupid. Fulgrim glanced at her as if seeking reassurance. Then he began to speak.
I am Fulgrim. I am told that in the language of Old Kimos, it means water bringer, savior. And that is why I am here, to save you, all of you, from the least to the greatest.
The Dlandhounds drew back even further as he let his cloak fall to the deck. Even clad in his simple garments, he was impressive.
But to do that, I will need your help.
He held up his hands.
Even these hands, strong as they are not enough for the task ahead.
He smiled, and it was as if a sun had sprung, newborn, into the firmament. A sigh went through them, and weapons drifted downward as trigger fingers went slack. Something in them, something nestled deep in their blood and marrow, resonated with that smile, with that voice, with that face. They were drawn to it like moths to an impossible flame. Igori had not seen it before in the cramped darkness. Only here, in the open, could it truly flourish.
I am Fulgrim, and you will help me,
Fulgrim said. His voice rumbled through the bay like gentle thunder.
I know this as I know my own name.
He strode among the new men, unarmed and unafraid.
You will help me, for we are all children of the one you call benefactor, and children owe no greater loyalty than that due to a parent. He is our father, and he needs our aid. Will you deny him that?
His words were simple, but his voice added a luster to them. He towered over even the tallest of their number, and Igori wondered how there could be any connection between them. How had the benefactor managed to distill such majesty down into their own humble forms? He turned, his smile gentle, his gaze kind.
You cannot. You will not. I see you, brothers and sisters. I see the fierce love that fills your mighty hearts, and know that it is the same as my own. We are all embers in the same fire. The same hand kindled us and set us ablaze with purpose.
He spread his arms, hands held out as if in welcome.
Long have I listened to my teacher as he spoke of what was to come and what must be. You are the future, but what is that future without him? He would deny it, but I cannot. We must act to preserve him, to preserve the future in its cradle. We must act, and I shall act. Will you follow me, sons and daughters of the benefactor?
Silence held for long moments. Fulgrim's smile never wavered. Then, one by one, the pack leaders knelt before him, heads bowed. Igori was the last. Even as she sank down, she felt a flicker of unease. She had the sense that this was some test and that she and her fellows had failed. But she pushed the thought aside. There were more important matters to hand. Fulgrim gestured.
Please, my brothers and sisters, rise! We have much to do, and little time to do it in.
Warriors were dying,
Metal figures were on the march throughout the green-lit tier. Fabius's only concern was the opponent in front of him, the one in purple and gold. Then, that was no surprise. His brothers had always been his greatest enemy, whatever the battlefield. Palos's head jerked forward, crunching against Fabius's own. Ceramite buckled, and his visual feed spasmed. Fabius felt his foot slip off the edge of the sub-tier. He wrestled against Palos's strength, holding the axe at bay with torment.
"I can offer far more than Alkanex,"
Fabius hissed the words out, fighting to maintain his balance. Green light crackled over Palos's shoulder. The vox rattled with screams and curses. They were being torn apart while he wasted time with this fool. He saw Meshana lying near the remains of her brother, though whether she was unconscious or dead he couldn't tell. He felt a flicker of dismay to see his work treated so, but it was swept aside by more immediate concerns.
"Serve me, and your rewards will be great. The only reward I seek is your death,"
Pylos grunted.
"For every brother you have cut open on your slabs, for every son of the Phoenician you led into useless death, I will take your foul head and present it to my commander."
"Eloquent," Fabius said.
Stims flooded his system, and he shoved Palos back.
"But you'll have to try harder than that if you want my head. Kill him. A Xenos spirit stone to the warrior who brings me his head,"
Palos roared as he staggered back. Several nearby Emperor's children turned, casting aside their bolters in favor of blades, and they launched themselves at him. He wondered how long they had been waiting for such an opportunity to react so swiftly. Fabius crushed the head of the first, torment screaming in ecstasy as it struck the Ceramite. A second thrust at him with a crystalline blade that changed hues with every slash. Fabius drove a kick into his midsection, doubling him over and shoved him backwards. The third leapt at him with an ululating howl. The warrior hacked at him with a pair of curved blades, tearing through his coat and scoring his armor. Spotting an opening, Fabius lunged and caught his opponent by the throat. He drove torment into the warrior's chest, just between his hearts, and let the scepter's power shriek forth. The space marine screamed as waves of agony shredded his enhanced nervous system, too overwhelming to be pleasurable. Smoke spewed from the joints of his armor as the pain cooked him inside out. With a grunt of effort, Fabius flung the smoking body off the sub-tier. He turned and received a glancing blow from Palos. The axe sheared through diagnostic hoses and stim pumps, eliciting a hissing wail from the chirurgeon. Palos drove a kick into his chest, and Fabius staggered back.
"Now I take your head," Palos growled.
"No, you do not."
Diomat's claw crunched into Palos's armor. The dreadnought jerked the warrior up into the air. Cursing, Palos sank his axe into Diomat's frame.
"Strike me as much as you like, traitor. I will endure 1,000 deaths before I yield."
Diomat wrenched Palos's arm from its socket with ease. The friction axe remained where it had struck, jutting from his shoulder plate. Palos's shrieks were muffled a moment later as the dreadnought closed his other claw over the warrior's head.
"Fabius, do you yet live?"
the dreadnought asked as he cast aside Palos's remains.
"I am functional," Fabius said, levering himself to his feet with torment.
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw something gliding upwards from below. Several silvery, splayed shapes. They resembled the arachnid constructs he'd seen earlier, but each of these possessed a long serpentine tail. The metallic wraiths passed easily through the struts and joists of the tiers and sub-tiers below as they ascended, somehow phasing in and out of solidity. Even as he retreated from the edge of the sub-tier, one of them passed through it, solidifying as it did so. The green-veined stonework ruptured as if struck by a grenade, and Fabius felt himself lurching backwards off balance.
"Fabius!"
Diomat roared, reaching for him. The massive claw snagged his coat, halting his plummet. Fabius flailed for a moment, trying to regain his equilibrium. He saw one of the serpentine shapes coil itself about Diomat. Even as he made to shout a warning, the entity rose up over the contemptor like a snake, readying itself to strike. The weapon slung beneath its broad form crackled, and a stream of antimatter particles punched through ancient armor. Diomat howled and turned, using his free claw to grasp at the wraith-like creature. But too late. It flickered away, out of reach. More shots punched into Diomat, flensing his armor from his chassis and rendering gilded hull plates to slag. The substance of the weakened sub-tier crumbled beneath him as he became overbalanced. The wraith-like automatons circled him like birds of prey. Helpless, caught halfway between the void and safety, Fabius could only watch in dismay as the sub-tier finally gave way beneath his would-be savior. With a rumbling groan, the stonework collapsed, taking both Diomat and Fabius with it.